Yo, what's up? This your boy Uncle Luke, and you're checking out my man, the Hard Man, Down with the King, Toronto.
Turn up the bass.
You're listening to Down with the Kings on Maximum FM Hip Hop.
Back, we are here on Down with the Kings, and I'm pleased to be joined by our featured guest, who you can add author to his collection of titles, if you will. Enter rapper, entertainer, godfather of Miami hip hop, if you will. He's none other than Luther Campbell in the house. What's happening, Luke?
Hey, what's happening, man? How you doing?
I'm great. Appreciate you taking the time to be on the program. And first off, got to congratulate you on the book, the Book of Luke, My Fight for Truth, Justice, and Liberty City. Intriguing title, The Fight. Is that what a proper way of encapsulating sort of your personal journey? Has it been a fight?
Yeah, it's been a fight. I mean, you know, when you got to go to the Supreme Court, you got to fight in District Courts of Appeal, you know, you got to fight for respect for Miami, South Florida, fight for hip-hop, you know, go on the road, you know, fight, you know, New York artists and artists from outside of Miami. It's always been a fight.
Mm-hmm. And you know, reading through your book, I have to say it's certainly inspiring in the way that, you know, you kept fighting through. What pushes you to keep going when you know, you're up against another fight or another fight? What makes you keep going?
Well, the mere fact that, you know, I always taught, you know, just like I say, my parents, you know, they've always taught me to fight. You know, every man fights for what he believes in, and that's what's important to me.
Gotcha. The decision to put together a story such as your own, or tell your story rather, I'm assuming the process of kind of keeping on top of all the stories, I'm sure there's things you probably left out or didn't include or what have you. Was it a difficult process to sit down and put it all together once you decided to do so?
Yeah, it was very difficult because there's so many things I could have did a book on. You know, putting it all together in one was kind of really, really, really difficult because I could have just did a book on all my court cases. I could have did one just on Two Live Crew, on the building of Luke Records, you know, in the struggles of South Florida. So I just, you know, I think we did a real good job of putting everything together and letting people get to know me as a person, because that's the most important thing it is.
Right. And I'm assuming a lot of people figure that they know you already because they've seen, you know, what you do with Live Crew. And I think what you did with your book is sort of break down a sort of misconception of what people thought, how they understood you to be.
Yeah, it is. And that's why it's important to do the book, because so many years, you know, I'm like the Rodney Dangerfield of hip-hop, you know, never really getting any respect, you know what I mean? And so it's important to do a book where people can get a clear understanding as to who created Southern hip-hop, you know, the things that we fought for hip-hop, and where we stand at, you know, and who changed the whole face of the music business. So it was important to do this book, and maybe now they'll give, you know, South Florida the respect it deserves so much in this hip-hop business.
Right. You know, the one thing that really surprised me was the infighting that went on within hip hop. The fact that, you know, East Coast rappers, if you will, or New York City rappers, didn't give you the respect because they didn't appreciate what you did. That caught me off guard. I didn't realize that.
Oh yeah, that was serious. And I mean, and like I talk about in the book, I mean, there were shows that we would do where we would have to fight Public Enemy's road manager, and that's how me and Chuck D ended up becoming friends. And we would have to fight Run DMC on stage in Biloxi, Mississippi. You know, we were not accepted in the business, and that's why people needed to know a real story of what we had to go through, because you got a lot of Southern hip-hop artists from Lil Wayne's to T.I.'s and all these guys in the world. They don't know the things that we had to go through for them to be able to do what they are doing right now today.
And no, I think the thing that people need to recognize with you, Luke, and incredible when you look at your career, because you mentioned Run DMC as an example. You know, you were a promoter and you brought them to Miami when you were promoting, and you know, so you've got a lot of history in the game here we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, back then, you know, we had this little club called the Pack Jam, and we would bring everybody down there from Jefferson High to Run DMC to Tila Rock to Original Concepts, Cooley D, you name it, Divine Sound, you name it. We would bring them all down and do shows.
Right, right, right. No, that's incredible. That's incredible. A lot of acts you broke essentially in that area because of the fact that you know they coming from New York, they're not getting down there until they you know Uncle Luke brought them in.
Yeah, no, I mean I was a DJ, so the main thing what I used to do was you know break the records, and after we would break the record, we would bring the artists down to perform because you know the radio stations wasn't playing hip hop. It was just only the DJs that was playing.
Gotcha. I got to ask him, certainly, you know, when you look at your career, you know, some know you as Uncle Luke, some Luther Campbell, you know, Luke Skywalker is another name that you went by. And I thought it was really interesting in your book that you sort of talked about sort of almost, it was almost like they were different personalities. You want to explain that just a bit?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's two different things. I mean, you know, there's one guy that's on stage, you know, that's Uncle Luke, and the other guy, Luther Campbell, that runs the record company every day, a business person, you know. And that, you know, is, you know, you can't be one, you know, off the stage. You can't be an entertainer when you're dealing with everyday life and business. You know, you leave what's on the stage, you leave that there, and then, you know, the same thing. You can't be a businessman on stage. You got to go in and get the people what they want. And that's what, you know, I'm happy that I've been always able to do that.
Right. What's also I find really interesting is, you know, when you came out, you know, that was a time when artists weren't really thinking about the business, so to speak, whereas you were. You know, now in current hip-hop, you know, artists are thinking about having their own labels and having their own companies and, you know, handling, you know, different aspects of the business side, whereas, you know, whereas it wasn't as common back then. What sort of made you step out or distinguish you from the others back then?
Well, that was, and that's the other part that hopefully people, when they read the book, they'll get the mere fact that nobody else was, had their own record companies. I mean, that was that wasn't the thing. The thing was, the goal was at that time to sign up with Atlantic Records or CBS or one of those labels, and then you would have, you know, you would have arrived. And so, you know, unfortunately, we were forced. I was forced to start my own record company, you know, because, you know, it wasn't a such thing as a hip-hop artist from the South. So, it was, you know, which was a good thing, you know, and what people need to realize that actually revolutionized the business. Everybody wanted to own their own record label the same way, but unfortunately, those folks were not owning their own record labels. The industry made an adjustment to make them feel like they were owning their own labels by giving them a label name, but the deal was basically a production deal. And so they were all only producers. They didn't own anything. And to this day, a lot of them don't own nothing.
It just sounded like that. And they're like, okay, I'm good now. But really, they were. They're far from it. They weren't any further ahead.
Yeah. They made an adjustment. They were like, everybody want to be like this guy now. And so they did it.
Right.
And then what ended up happening is what? You know, we'll give you Cash Money Records, LaFace Records, things like that. But they didn't necessarily own those labels. You know, I was still the only one that owned it. And, again, still not getting the credit for a guy who owned and operated his own label. Manufactured, first distributed the product myself.
Right. You know what's amazing? You learn that all on the fly, which is absolutely incredible because you had that much success for jumping into something that was brand new. Incredible.
Yeah, everything on the fly. Just using common sense.
Right. Doesn't hurt. You know, as you talk about owning your own and you know, an artist that didn't, one of the stories I recall you making reference to is how artists sort of maybe felt jealous, so to speak, of the fact that, you know, they were, you know, you were getting merchandising, you were, you know, you were handling distribution, you know, all aspects of the business that they weren't. Do you think that kind of contributed to sort of the friction between yourself and some of the New York rappers back then?
No, not necessarily, because after, you know, we became friends and everybody started opening up to each other, they wanted to know about what I was doing in the business, you know, and they realized that they were getting taken advantage of by the record companies as well as their management when it came to merchandise and all those different things.
Right. No, well, hey, like I said, it's incredible. I mean, I was really impressed with the fact that you're able to do this on the fly and not have any, you know, any prior experiences. That was incredible. The relationship, you know, you sort of talked about your relationship with other hip hop groups. Wondering if you sort of identify, and I think you mentioned in your book, you know, what your biggest mistake was. Well, what would you say that was in the industry?
Trusting too many people.
Yeah.
You know, trying to use common sense and doing the right thing, but just giving too many people, a few people, too much leverage, you know, because they had the credentials, you know, and when they had the credentials, you think they have ethical morals, but not knowing that, you know, because you have a law degree, you know, does not mean you're ethical, you know.
Right.
And at that time, you know, I would change that.
Right. That had to have been hurtful, knowing that you trusted, you know, individuals, and it bit you back the way it did. That had to hurt, I'm guessing.
Well, yeah, it was, it's life. You know, I ain't the first one, and won't be the last one. You know, hopefully people will read the book and they'll learn some things, whatever my mistakes were, as well as the positives they're using in their journeys.
Right. As you talk about learning things, I think the thing that stood out for me, I was totally surprised and had no idea that, you know, you were the first to have that parental sticker label on albums. I had no idea.
Yeah, I basically created it. You know, I had to create it. When you read the book, it tells you, you know, I got complaints from parents, and the music, I had no intentions of it getting the kids, so we put a sticker on the records and, you know, told the record stores, hey, look, don't sell this record to the kids. So, you know, I had to create and design that sticker that people see every day.
Man, imagine getting royalties off that today, Luke, on that sticker.
I know. That's why I messed up there.
So would that have been your second biggest mistake then? you also identified the 1990 MTV performance, and you said that was the best performance ever, and you categorized that. Can you explain why you said that?
Oh, man. Because I won this in game room. Because, you know, it was so emotional. You know, it was so emotional. At the time, you know, we were going through so much. You know, we just basically, you know, once we did that performance, that was, it was like a relief.
Right. Well, that's awesome. Well, you know, look, Luke, I think you did an amazing job with the book. Congratulations, you know, being an author. You know, a lot of people think about doing it, and you actually went out and did it and did a phenomenal job at that. And you want to let our listeners know where they can pick up a copy of the book.
Hey, you can pick up a copy of the book, Eddie Barnes & Noble. You can get it online, Amazon, is everywhere. I mean, anywhere online, you know, on your phone, on your apps or whatever, anywhere books are sold, people can purchase it. You can purchase that through HarperCollins. You know, and I'm just so happy that for the last 3 weeks, it's been number one on Amazon, you know, as far as sales. So, you know, I'm excited. You know, I'm excited for the mere fact that a lot of, you know, movie production houses are calling up now. And because of the success of Compton, that people now want to do this book, turn this book into a movie. So I'm happy.
Nice. But by the way, did you have an opportunity to check out Straight Outta Compton yet?
Yeah, I think it was a great appetizer to my movie.
I love it. Well, Luke, listen, I appreciate you being on the program and share a little bit about the book, and congratulations on the great job, and be well, my friend, be well.
Thank you.
Looking for that hip-hop fix? We're here for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Maximum FM Hip-Hop. Listen live or download the app.